Coming up, we get Jonathan Givony talking NBA draft. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking playoffs with Tom Haverstraw. But today, it's all draft today with Jonathan Givony, and then my interview with Cedric Coward, Washington State prospect, projected to go in the first round. That's coming up after Givony. Here's Jonathan. Joining me now, Jonathan Givony from Draft Express and ESPN. John, how you doing today, man, here in Chicago?
I'm doing great. It's an awesome week, very productive. It's nonstop in the gym with conversations and drills and athletic testing and the scrimmages. So there's a lot going on, but it's been a lot of fun.
I mean, I appreciate you carving out some time to talk with me on this podcast today. We're going to do 23 questions about the NBA draft. 23 because we're in Chicago in honor of Michael Jordan, of course. Number one, let's just get going right away. You were on ESPN yesterday. You were talking about Dylan Harper going to be the number two pick, whether it's San Antonio or somebody else. You talked about how the Spurs seem comfortable pairing Harper with De'Aaron Fox, with Stephon Castle. I'm curious, what would you do, though, if you're the Spurs in that number two slot right now? What would be your number one priority as the Spurs?
If I'm drafting, I'm taking Dylan Harper. He's the second best prospect in the draft, and I think there's a pretty big gap there after him, just with the season that he had. And for me, watching the NBA playoffs, seeing how important it is to have that big shot creator with a strong frame who can just get in the paint and play through contact and draw fouls, score, but also create for others and defend too, multiple positions. I think that's really, really important.
Leadership too. Potentially.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he's got all the character and everything that you're looking for at that spot. But, you know, if Giannis is there for me, I mean, I got to look at that, man. 30-year-old Hall of Famer in his prime. Like, I'm just so intrigued by the pairing of Victor and Giannis. And, like, how do you score on that? And so I don't know if that's realistic. I'm not even sure that's in play, but that would really intrigue me. That would be something that I would definitely explore, at least.
I mean, I think for the Spurs, that would be number one on my wish list, is trade for Giannis Antetokounmpo. It's almost kind of an obvious thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, so how many opportunities do you have to add a top five player in the NBA, especially when you started, you know, with the sixth pick, you know, and to thinking it through that lens, you know, it's like, man, I want to win right now. Let's add, you know, like an all NBA first team guy who's won a championship, and imagine like 4 or 5 pick and roll Giannis and Victor, either one running it, crazy, setting a ball screen, rolling. I mean, like, man, that's going to be that'd be really hard to slow down.
And then you have Fox with his downhill attacking ability. They've already hit the accelerator a little bit on how they want to build around Victor by trading for Fox. And then you have his downhill attacking ability. For all we talked about what Dame and Giannis could have been, maybe it's the downhill attacking point guard and Fox that could really unleash Giannis the roller. Now, with Giannis, second question here, do you have any intel on like what he might favor the most here for his next team if he does indeed leave the Bucks?
I haven't spoken with his camp or anything. You know, you hear the rumors, whatever, but like that's really like more Shams department. And so I have no idea what Giannis wants to do or what's going to end up happening there. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if he ended up staying in Milwaukee. You know, like, he's been there his whole career. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's obviously very comfortable there, and he's had opportunities where he could have asked out or whatever. So I don't have any like firm intel, but I wouldn't surprise me if Giannis is in a Bucks uniform next season.
It wouldn't shock me necessarily either. We've seen this story play out before. What was it, like 4 years ago? Malik Andrews had the story about, oh, Giannis will reevaluate his position there. We've seen this kind of play out. We've seen him play, you know, his power spot here in Milwaukee and try to get them to make deals.
That's how you put pressure on them. It's like, hey, guys, I want to win. You know, it's like, we're not going to rebuild now. You know, like,
it's just they're running out of things to do.
That's true.
Issue.
Yeah. They don't have, that's
and Dame's out.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's a real problem for them. No question.
And now at number three right now, among Philadelphia 76ers fan, of course, it's a big win. They get to keep their pick. They move up to number three. There's already kind of like a war among Sixers fans about Ace Bailey. You have Sixers fans that want Ace Bailey because of his upside, 6'9", 6'10", shot maker. Then you have a lot of Sixers fans who are like, he couldn't help Rutgers win. How is he going to help us win games here right now? With Ace Bailey, I think he's most likely to bust of the top five guys. That's my opinion. Do you feel the same way?
Absolutely not.
No?
No, I mean, I love Ace Bailey. I live in New York, so I got a chance to spend a lot of time at Rutgers, both practices and games. Also watched him quite a bit. USA basketball in high school. I've had an opportunity to get to know him also off the court. And I firmly believe that Ace Bailey is going to be a star in the NBA. And I just look at, I went to watch him work out a couple of days ago. A guy with that kind of size and length and explosiveness and shot-making prowess. He's 18 years old. Doesn't turn 19 until August. He's I think people talk about the Rutgers stuff and all that, you know, sure, you can knock him for that, but he's a very competitive guy. He wants to win. He's about the right things. You know, I just watching the interaction between him and Dylan Harper, you know, like those guys, obviously, like Dylan Harper wouldn't mess with a guy like that if he was like a loser, you know, like, and Dylan, Ace Bailey, he's going to be big time, I think. And if I'm Philadelphia, I'm 100% drafting him third.
100%.
Yeah, no question about
even,
it.
Even if it means, you know, like you're minimizing chances now.
I don't see the alternative. Like VJ Edgecombe, how does that make sense with Maxey and McCain? Jeremiah Fears, obviously not. Trey Johnson, I can see the argument, but
a lot of overlap with Maxey and McCain, though, with him.
Yeah, I mean, he could probably play the three, you know, because he's 6'6", 6'10", mm-hmm. wingspan, obviously not very strong, and the defense was not very good at Texas this year, but
Knipple on a trade down, something like that, perhaps.
Sure, I'm a big Con Knipple guy, so if that's the direction that they go, absolutely. So, I think Ace Bailey, yeah, three, that's who I would take.
Now we see, you know, the Wizards and the Jazz move down four spots. Dallas obviously moves up to number one. The whole NBA world is shocked by that. Do you think the NBA should reform the lottery again?
I don't know what they would do, you know, because it would. It's so ugly, like the second half of the year as it is already. Yeah. And so I think if you just give the number one pick to the worst team, like it's just going to cause teams to just tank the entire season and not half the year. And so, but I feel for the Wizards and the Jazz, you know, I have friends in those front offices, mm-hmm. New Orleans, and it's a huge kick in the nuts, you know, like you spend the whole year, you know, putting yourself in position to hopefully get Cooper Flagg, and if not Flagg, then one of the other top Crazy. Guys. And then I don't know, you know, how do you sell that to your fan base? Like, what do we do? Are we going to go back to that well now again? And so it's brutal. Honestly, it's brutal. So I don't know what the solution is.
Now, along the lines of the Wizards and the Jazz, they fall four spots. Of those two teams, who has more incentive to trade up in the draft?
Between
the Wizards and the Jazz.
I would probably say the Jazz, because I think they have more picks and they really have, I mean, they both need a star. And I, you know, with Lowry, you know, like, I think you want to get this thing going. Like they've kind of been treading water a little bit.
Unless you're trading Lowry Markkanen.
Right.
You could go the other way after not trading him last year.
True. Yeah. I honestly haven't thought about that much, but I would think Utah.
I think so, too. I mean, with the Wizards, I think you're playing a little slow with Utah. I think there's a little bit more pressure, especially if you keep Lowry Markkanen. I want to talk about the scrimmage this week. We saw Dame one of the scrimmages yesterday. You wrote on ESPN about this with your biggest takeaways. Maxime Reynaud, Stanford center, had 29-3. He was communicating on defense, measured in at 7 foot barefoot, 9'2" standing reach. With Reynaud, I've been pretty high on him. I've had him top 20. I think he's currently 16 or 15 on my board. The versatility, we saw the shot making with him, the movement threes and all that. You have him 34 on your board. And I know your board is typically a reflection of NBA teams with what they're feeling about other guys. Is that accurate to say, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah,
now, definitely. Why is there such a differential between where I have him and like late lotto, mid first to early second with NBA teams? Where's that gap?
I think teams wanted to see him in this setting. I think that's helped him a lot, being able to play alongside better players and display a higher level of intensity and physicality than what we had seen in his four-year career. Now, the thing about Maxime that you have to remember is that he's very late to the game. I mean, he didn't really start playing basketball or in an organized way until he was 16. You know, was this like incredible student. He went to like the best high school in France, and he's a genius. And he was like this elite swimmer. And so I think, you know, you have to think about him in a little bit of a different lens in terms of like what his upside is. It's not like that of a typical 22-year-old. So I come into this week like with eyes wide open, and we've seen year after year that guys, you know, compete in the scrimmages and they help themselves and they move up. And so I think Maxime Reynaud did that yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I think the dude's awesome. I think especially with the way teams are using two bigs nowadays, you're seeing so much of that. And another guy that stood out the scrimmages, Yaxel Lendenborg, could be going to Michigan this year. He had a very good performance for the scrimmage team. 6'10", 7'4", wingspan. He reported he requires a guarantee in order to stay in the draft rather than going to Michigan, where he'd fill in for Danny Wolf. I mean, a really big role for him. What's your prediction with the Yaxel Lendenborg? What does he do, stay or go?
We're going to see what happens in the scrimmage today. I think that's going to have a major influence. I think he's torn, you know, just like...
Is it 50-50 with him?
That's what he said yesterday. And you know, I broke the story of him going to Michigan, and I spent a lot of time on the phone with him in the lead up to that. We had two different conversations, and we talked through a lot of it, you know, only like a very small handful of quotes actually made into the story. And I felt like he really wants to go to college, like he's not 100% ready yet. I mean, if you think about his backstory too, like also didn't start playing organized. He only played 11 varsity games in high school, and it was a senior year. He had all these academic That's issues. Crazy. He was this like big time gamer, and he told me he'd like wake up every morning at 7 a.m. or whatever, 8 o'clock, head down to his mom's basement, just spend like 18 straight hours.
Oh, he was that guy when people talk games. Trash on video games. You're in your mom's basement. Exactly. He was actually that guy.
That was him, yeah. And so like he couldn't care less about school. And so like he was just all about video games for the longest time. And his
what
mom
games? Do you know?
What's that?
Do you know what games? Call of Duty guy, Madden guy, like what was
I
he?
Didn't ask. I should have asked that question. I'm not a gamer myself, so it wouldn't have said much to me. But eventually his mom got tired of it and just like kicked him out of the house. And it's like she made him go to this tryout camp for like Dominican players in New York. And he was awesome there, even though like he really had no experience playing basketball. And Mark Hsu, who's like a longtime assistant coach or whatever, like saw him there and called his buddy in Phoenix at like a very small junior college. And was like, you got to get your eyes on this guy. And somehow this guy got his mom's phone number. And the mom is like, she just basically kicked him out of the house, drove him to the airport. It's like, you're going to Arizona to this junior college. And that's how his career, and this was like, you know, 4 years ago or whatever. So, I mean, like the upside, and it's incredible, like how good his feel for the game is, considering that like he's never really been coached. Like this is like really his first year.
It's all from the gaming, hand-eye coordination.
I guess so. Maybe that's the key, you know, 18 straight hours of gaming, you know, if you want to be a good player, kids, that's what you got to do. So I don't know what he's going to do, but I could see the argument both sides, and like selfishly, like, I would love to see him at Michigan, you know, like how awesome would that be? Like watching him in the Big Ten all year. And so, but like, I mean, he looked amazing in the scrimmages yesterday and then in the drills did before. Mm-hmm. So like he could be in the top 20. So that's hard to turn down also.
I agree. I mean, I think if you're him, like playing the Danny Wolf role, you're going to have a big opportunity there in Michigan. You're filling huge shoes there with what Wolf did there.
Right.
It's an opportunity for him to maybe be a lottery pick.
Right.
Even though he'll be a bit older, considering his developmental background.
Yeah.
Maybe like it really, I think it depends on team situation, who's making the promise, and do you feel that's better for your future and your development versus making like a pretty good bag of money at Michigan.
$3 million or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's a great opportunity. Yeah. And you could win a lot of games at a high level. Now with Danny Wolf, he's somebody I haven't been super high on. I view him as a lot of, you know, flash, not a lot of substance. He's an inefficient scorer from three. Like he takes step backs, but he doesn't make a lot of them. He's a poor free throw shooter.
Did he shoot 38 for three or whatever? What did he shoot?
I think he shot like 32 in the end.
Maybe
or something
in the
like
Big
that.
Ten. Yeah.
I think in the Big Ten he shot better.
Let's pull it up. Yeah.
He had some good stretches, but he's a sub 70% guy from the free throw line. Average assist to turnover ratio. I see the appeal. I see the appeal with Danny Wolf.
Yeah.
But I can't get there with Danny Wolf. So what am I missing? Why do so many teams have him as a top 20 guy?
He's just so unique, you know? Like, you don't see a 7-footer playing point guard, passing off a live dribble, you know, playing 4 or 5.
Behind the back.
I mean, he's so creative, and he's so skilled. Right hand, left hand, Euro steps. I mean, that's really intriguing. And so, you know, I think you wonder, you know, with a better shot diet, would he shoot would he shoot better? I mean, like when you're handing the ball as much as he did, like it's hard to be like a really high 3-point percentage guy. And then I just think like the length, I mean, 7'2" wingspan, 9'1" reach, 250 pounds, like his measurements were very impressive for a guy who, you know, is going to pretty much play the four. He can slide up to the five, dribble, pass, and shoot. And like also like racked up a lot of rebounds, a lot of blocks, a lot of steals. So he's got a feel for the game too. You know, and again, like interesting backstory, you know, like went to Yale, barely played as a freshman. It's rare that you see a guy transfer up from the Ivy League to the Big Ten and become a much better player. You know, even though he's played 3 years of college basketball, I think he's got real upside to him too. I mean, I think he made huge gains athletically. I went to watch him, you know, cause they were in New Haven. So I went to games, and then like the Ivy League tournament was, right by my house at Columbia. I live in Harlem. So it's like, I couldn't believe how much more athletic he got this year. And so I wonder like, is there another gear that you can unlock there? And so, yeah, but he's definitely polarizing.
And I think also part of the appeal with a guy like that, or, you know, even with Reyno and among others, Sorber, double big seems to be back for a lot of teams in the NBA. Sure. You're seeing Minnesota use it. Of course, you see like Houston use it in the first round. Yeah. You see the Knicks starting to integrate it after not doing it all year with Mitchell Robinson and Karl Anthony Towns, right, among other teams. Yeah. So do you find that like when you talk to teams, has the importance and the use of double big increased the value of some of these bigs in the NBA draft class?
Definitely. I mean, the NBA is such a physical league right now. I mean, the playoffs, every game I watch, it's like a freaking war inside the paint. And so, like, you need bodies. You need big bodies inside. I mean, offensive rebounding is very important. You know, the bigger you are, I mean, you're going to be a better defensive team. It's just very hard.
We just saw the Luke Kornet game.
Exactly.
Channeling the spirit of Bill Russell, right, for the Celtics extending,
exactly,
the series.
Look at the Cavs, you know, like how tough they were to score on defensively with Mobley and Jared Allen. So it's, I do think size is back, and it's really important, and that's why all the bigs in this draft are going to get really long looks, even the guys in the second round.
Next question here. Let's go from big to small. Tahad Pettiford, he had a really good scrimmage game. He's still testing the waters of the NBA draft. Tahad Pettiford measured at what, 6 foot flat, right? Like 160 something pounds?
6 and a half, yeah, with a barefoot.
I mean, he's super small. If Pettiford is 3 inches taller, 20 pounds heavier, fair to say he's a top five pick with his skill level?
Probably, yeah. Yeah.
Probably in the Jeremiah Fears type of range.
If he's how big?
If he's 2-3 inches taller, yeah, 20 pounds heavier.
He'd be a different player, though.
Yeah,
you
of
know?
Course.
I mean, he's such a hooper. He had to develop, like, the left hand, the right hand. He's pretty much ambidextrous.
He's got the Mike Conley offhand floater. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and then, I mean, just, like, the stop and start game. I mean, the change of pace. I was at P3, and they were saying, like, he's one of the best athletes that we've ever seen in terms of just, like, breaks, gas, you know, kind of like in that James Harden, Luka Doncic mold, like obviously very different size, but like the ability to stop and start and, you know, get to places on the floor, and then, you know, so skillful with the pull-up jumper, and then he made some really nice passes yesterday too. He's getting underneath people defensively. So Tahad Pettiford is an absolute baller. I mean, the guy was a freshman, biggest moments of the season, like had his biggest games.
Clutch.
He's a hooper, man.
Yeah, I love that dude. I mean, I just obviously wish he was a little bit bigger, but at the same time, like I feel with the skill level with him, he's still worth, you know, mid first to me. But do you think he stays in the draft, or is like he someone that would require a promise?
I think the games today, the scrimmage will be very important. So we'll see what happens there. But I think it's 50-50 also.
Question: who's your favorite prospect not at the combine this week?
Oh, so from like the seven international guys?
Could be international guy, could be, you know, even a G League guy, someone who didn't get the call up, could be anybody.
Yeah, I mean, so a lot of these guys in Europe, you know, are not able to make it to the combine because they're all playing in their playoffs. So I would have loved to see Hugo Gonzalez out here, mm-hmm, you know, just to see like him playing 5-on-5, just wreaking havoc defensively, getting out in the open court, like just to get a better feel for his shooting, just where is he at with that part of his game. And I think people would like to get to know him better too. I mean, he's just been so under wraps and with Real Madrid. And his issue is that like his season might, like the game 5 of the ACB finals would be like the day of the NBA draft, June 25th. So it's like, he might not even be able to, like, you know, do his medical, any of that stuff. So that's just going to be a real challenge.
Does he do like Zoom interviews over that
month? Yeah, I think people are going out there and they do have the opportunity to like work him out, get to know him, all that. But like, I'm sure he'll do Zoom interviews, but just, it's not really the same, you know, like being able to go from facility to facility and do all these private workouts. And so, I mean, and he's a guy that people really need to get to know better because he's had this really uneven season where it's just like his playing time has been so inconsistent. But like, we saw him 3 years ago at the under 17 World Cup with, you know, going head to head with Cooper Flagg. And like, I still remember that gold medal game really vividly. They were both 15 years old at the time. And like, I mean, it was like, who's better, you know, at that, in that moment, all these FIBA events, like Hugo was always the guy, you know, like over Jakob Jonas and Yegor Damin and Noah Traore. And it's like, he's been surpassed by these guys, a lot of it because his situation is so poor. And, you know, just he's not like this perfectionist 3-and-D guy that he needs to be to get a lot of playing time in the EuroLeague. Like, it's such a high level of competition that they play at, that I wonder, like, how would he look if he were at for example, or even in college? Like, I think we'd be talking about him as a lottery pick.
Is he locked into this year's draft class?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Okay, yeah, so I asked his agent that same exact question a couple of days ago, and he's like, man, the cards are going to fall where they fall, and somebody's going to get a steal. And so it'll play out.
Interesting. Will he come to the NBA next season, or could he stay overseas?
Oh, he's definitely coming. Okay. If it's up to him, he's definitely coming.
Okay, I see. Cooper Flagg, you hear people say he's the best prospect since LeBron at number one. You hear people since KD Oden back in 07. Where do you think Cooper
We just
Flagg?
Had Victor, you know? Flagg, like, so, oh. I mean, you know where I stand on Victor, you know, and so I think
just since back,
Victor is the best prospect that I've evaluated
ever.
In the draft, you know, like, I've been doing this for 20 years. So I wasn't 2004
how about was college prospect specifically.
Oh,
then?
College.
How about college? Let's remove international.
Dude,
let's remove high school.
I can't even remove
LeBron high school. Just best college number one pick since who?
Zion. I mean,
okay, so you wouldn't go back further.
Dude, Zion at Duke was
amazing.
Unreal. Like, we still haven't seen, like, what Zion really is. But, like, that – it was much must-watch basketball every time he stepped on the floor. Just the dunks and, like, I mean, it was unreal. That from the opening moment, the Champions Classic, Zion was incredible, man. Just and I hope that one day, like, everybody gets to see in the NBA what we all saw from Zion, because when he's played, he's been unbelievable. So like if I'm an NBA team, like, I'm trying to trade for Zion right now, man.
Really?
Like, yeah, I mean, that guy could be a top five player in the NBA.
If he stays healthy, and if he's in prime shape.
He looks decent shape. We just saw him at the lottery,
it's
man.
Not, it's not crazy to say. Yeah. It really isn't. We see the flashes, the
guys
moments.
It's time to figure it out sometimes. So,
of course. And he's still young.
I'm still a Zion guy.
Still a Zion guy. Yeah. So if you're a GM, you're trying to trade for Zion right
a
now.
A million percent.
New,
yeah.
New Pelicans front office.
Let's put him with Victor.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. If you're the Spurs, would you rather trade for Victor for Giannis or Zion?
Giannis is proven,
yeah,
you know.
Of course.
Yeah,
he's
know what you're
top
getting.
20 all-time.
I'm not like rolling the dice, you know.
But
like,
if you don't get Giannis, if Giannis goes to, say, Houston or somewhere else, if then you're the Spurs, maybe then you turn to Zion.
100%.
That would be intriguing.
Yeah,
talk about two of the weirdest players in the league, Victor Wembanyama.
Good luck guarding that.
Oh my God, I almost would rather have that
for
a fun excitement, you know, standpoint. But Giannis obviously makes him a winner right away. Now with Cooper, he's going to be the number one pick. Is there anyone in the league, or is there any potential trade package that you could see the Mavs trading out of number one for?
No, I mean, Nico would get fired if he even brought that up. Honestly, like, I mean, you saw where when Tim McMahon reported that the Mavericks are taking Cooper Flagg number one, you saw like basically like what the source was. It was came straight from ownership. So it's like, I don't see any scenario that they would even entertain that.
No scenario. Who's most likely to slip this year? We see guys, you know, all the time. Bouzelis last year, Cam Whitmore, different guys always slip. Somebody inevitably will this year. Who's most likely to slip out of top five or top 10 range?
I think this is going to be a pretty stable year. Like, I don't see, you know, like, anybody dropping dramatically like last year or 2 years ago, whatever.
Killian Hayes is my biggest whiff ever in the draft. What's yours?
I need to think about that one. Let me get back to you. There's a lot, you know, like, it's a long list. I mean, every year you do this, it's been 20 years now. It's like,
There's always whiffs.
There's nobody that like keeps me up at night, you know, because like you're learning every year. You go back to your experience. So like every night I'm watching the playoffs. And I'm like, when did I first see that guy? What did I think about him? How did he evolve? And like these guys change so much. And so that's part of the process. And I need to think more about that.
Mark Stein reported that the Hawks want Masai Ujiri. It feels like Masai's involved in this stuff literally every other year. Any possibility that this is actually the time he could leave?
I haven't asked him that, so I have no idea. But everybody should want Masai Ujiri. He's one of the best executives in the NBA.
One of the best, absolutely. Yeah. Over a decade now, he has been. Yeah. My draft crush this year is Cedric Coward out of Washington State. I think that dude, 6'5", 7'2", wingspan, the shooting ability, the defensive ability, the versatility with him. I think that dude is going to be a really good NBA player for a long time. Do you have a draft crush this year?
A crush? So let's see, like a guy that I just like love.
Yeah, your
watching,
guy.
But I don't look at it that way. They're all my guys, you know. Like I've seen all.
You have a guy. I mean, we all like you're. There's favorites.
I can't. I don't. That's not how I look at the draft. Honestly,
how do you look at the draft then?
I look at the draft as. It's opportunity. It's opportunity for teams to get better. And, you know, I've been watching all these guys. I want them all to pan out, you know, like it to be good because, like, you spend so much time around them from such a young age. And, you know, you just hope that they stay healthy and they are in the right opportunity, right platform, right opportunity, right development. And I think, like, that's kind of like a fan way of looking at it, you know, like, and I just think back to, like Rob Muirs, who is like this old school international scout who worked for the San Antonio Spurs, and he had a part in drafting Ginobili and like the New Jersey Nets. He was one of my mentors, like when I was like coming up in this business, like as a teenager and then my early 20s. And he would just hammer me on every call. He's like, you're looking at the draft like a fan, like you need to get that out of you. So it's always been kind of in the back of my head. It's like, don't be a fan. And so like, that's something.
What's the difference? Like, so like looking at it as a pure evaluator. How would you describe looking at it through that lens rather than like the fan lens?
Everybody's got strengths and weaknesses. Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of it is going to come down to like where these guys are and, you know, what makes them tick, you know, like their brain and their heart. And, you know, like guys are going to evolve too. Like how adaptable are you to different situations? And like, how do you respond to adversity? That's like the hardest part in this end process. Like, you know, it's something that we're not very good at, honestly. It's like figuring out. It's like also like we're not doctors too, so we don't know. Like, something like Giannis was 196 pounds when he came to the NBA. He was 6'9", and now he's like 265 or whatever. He's a 7-footer. He's like, he looks like freaking He-Man, you know? So like, it's hard to project sometimes. And so other guys like didn't make it, like Zion, for example, he hasn't reached his potential yet because of the injury stuff. Like, we don't know. So like, what could have been in a different, I sometimes wonder, like, what if Kawhi was drafted by the Wizards and Jan Vesely was drafted by the Spurs, you know, like how would their careers have played out? You know, the Wizards were like a dumpster fire at that point in time, you know, like it's just like all these Javaris Crittenden and, you know, like
he never improves his jumper. Right.
Maybe. Yeah, exactly. So what, you know, how does the complexion of the NBA change? Like, you know, do the Raptors win a championship? So like, you know, you could drive yourself crazy with all this stuff. So that a lot goes into, you know, like whether a guy's going to make it or not, but beyond like whether you like them
for
or you're
sure.
For them,
I mean, you're speaking to how like situation and opportunity and environment play such a pivotal role. It's nature and nurture.
Definitely.
Not just one.
Definitely.
It's both together, right?
100%. Yeah.
Some quick hit questions for you, Jonathan.
Okay.
Best shooter in the class.
Con Knipple.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. No, I mean, just the way that he can come off. I've gone to like Duke practice and like I've just seen him work out and just like the footwork and the mechanics and the ability to like come off movement and shoot off the dribble. And then like, but he's obviously much more than a shooter. He can also play pick and roll. He's a really good passer. He's a tough defender. Mm-hmm. Like his feel for the game is elite. But that's something that you can really bank on is like that shooting ability. And that's going to be like his calling card early on in his career. But I think he's going to eventually evolve and be, you know, like a Klay Thompson type of guy who like is not just a shooter.
I got him coming on the podcast. Probably will air it next week. 19 years old.
Yeah.
Acts like he's 39. Like the maturity level is outrageous.
For sure.
It feels like I'm sitting down with an adult, not a teenager. Who has the highest defensive upside in this class?
Probably Malawach, just because of the tools and just how much he's improved over the last few years with his body and his mobility and his feel for the game and also his skill level. I mean, first time I watched Kaman Malawach, he was 15 years old. He was playing at the NBA Academy Games in Mexico, and he was just like this scrawny guy who could barely, you know, chew gum and walk at the same time. And he was playing so hard, but like he had terrible hands. And I was like, man, it's going to be like a long road for this guy. And just see like year after year, the work that he's put in and how much he, and I bet on a guy like that personality. He lights up every room that he's in. You ask anybody that, you know, has been his teammate, just like he's beloved. And so I just think that like, if he stays healthy, like he's going to be an absolute game changer.
So you put him ahead of highest defensive upside, ahead of Flagg, Murray, Boyles.
Close. I mean, Cooper's instincts defensively, yeah, like are the best in this draft. I'm not even sure that we got to see like the full extent of it this year because they relied on him so much as a shot creator offensively, and they needed to do so many different things.
He had more of those like wow plays in high school than in college.
He did the blocks and all that. Just like the way that he covers ground, his processing speed, you know, like it's incredible.
He's like the highest upside safe defensive player. Definitely. In the class. I like Murray Boyles a lot, but it'd also be nice to see him in a winning situation doing it. Let's see. Next we have the lottery pick with the biggest red flag.
I wouldn't call it a red flag, but I would like to see Derek Queen. I think if Derek Queen is going to reach his full potential, he's going to have to get himself in better shape. I think just seeing him at the combine, how like methodically he was going through the drills, like, and I interviewed him too. I asked him this question, like, what kind of shape are you? And he said, yeah, 7 or 8, you know, like, and like, he's this like jovial guy who's like the life of the party. Like everybody loves Derek Queen, but I think like a lot of young NBA players, I think figuring out like making this like your full-time job and just like treating your body like a temple and like every, you know, and I think that's going to come down to the NBA team that drafts him too, and just like surrounding with the right people and nutrition and strength and conditioning. I think he will get there because I do think he loves basketball. I think he's competitive. And so I think that if he, you know, finds that extra gear with his motor and his conditioning, like the guy's an all-star. Like there's no doubt about it.
I think he's a great example of a guy where situation, environment is going to matter a lot. Like want him in a good situation.
Yes, 100%.
And now next question, the non-lottery pick most likely to end up the best player in the class.
That's a great question. Let me pull up my board again, you know, you know, but if I felt that way, then I would have them in the lottery. But let's see. So let's do the cutoff. I'm intrigued with Carter Bryant.
Okay.
Yeah. I think the tools and the defensive versatility and the feel for the game and the shooting, the body, the character. Just the way that Arizona raves about him and just the improvement that he's made over
a shooter, like conference tournament and NCAA tournament, he shot like 45% on a higher volume.
Everybody's looking for that player in today's NBA. And like, he could end up going in the lottery when it's all said and done. So I'm interested to see where he lands.
And because we're doing this 23 questions, we're here in Chicago, the Bulls, they are perennially average.
Yeah.
They are always average. 39 wins, 42 wins, you know, playing. Maybe next year in the East with Tatum out for most of the year, they'll get home court advantage with 40 wins next year in the weak Eastern Conference if Giannis goes west. Maybe that's what will happen. Who do the Bulls need to take with their lottery pick? The highest, is it a high upside player? Is it a safe player? How should the Bulls be approaching the mid-late lottery here with their first round pick?
Blow it up. Yeah, give the fans what they want. You know, they've been calling
You're speaking my language, Jonathan.
Okay, but we just finished talking about how brutal it was for Utah and Washington and New Orleans, you know, to have this like miserable year. But like, still, I'd rather be drafting 6, 7, 8 as opposed to 12.
I agree.
Right?
Yes.
So.
So you're trading Kobe White. You're trading
everybody.
Yeah. And because next year's draft class.
Is going to be phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very exciting
There's like
group.
Three Cooper flags, not just one, right?
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, we'll see how they do in college. But like, yeah, Darren Peterson, Angel DeBonza, Cam Boozer, Nate Ament. Like, it's a low, and then like it keeps going. Mm-hmm. Kareem Lopez, you know, Jaden Quinton. So like it, and then all these guys that came back to college also, it's going to be a really fun draft.
Yeah. I mean, it could be next year is going to be awesome. Like, this year is fun. I think it's going to be a good draft class with a lot of good players, but next year it's like, that's the year you've even if you end up at number five, you might be okay with that.
Yes.
You really might be. Jonathan, appreciate you joining me today, man. This means a lot. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin, of course.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Big thank you to Jonathan for joining me. Coming up now, we have Cedric Coward, Washington State prospect, projected first round pick. I really love him as a player, and I think you will too after hearing my conversation with him.
Here with Cedric Coward from Washington State. First round pick in the 2025 NBA draft, also a Duke commit. Cedric, how you doing today, man?
I'm good. Blessed. Thanks for having me.
So your story, your backstory is fascinating here because you started at Willamette University, a D3 school. You go there for a year. You transfer to a mid-major. You go to Eastern Washington. You're there 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then you transfer to Washington State this last season, high major. You play 6 games. You suffer a shoulder injury, knocks you out for the remainder of the season. And yet here you are today at the NBA Draft Combine in Chicago with a commitment to Duke. You're testing the waters in the NBA draft, likely going to be a first-round pick, likely in the top 20. How the hell do you go from D3 4 years ago to where you are sitting here today?
Having belief and faith. I think just believing in myself, understanding that my journey is a unique one and the one that God wanted me to go through. It wasn't the quickest one, you know. Not one and done, but at the same time, it's built me up for a lot of things to handle a lot of situations I've been in, you know, with the being at D3, with the injury, all this stuff. I'm built for anything else that comes my way along this journey, but I'm super blessed and I'm super, you know, proud that I kept believing in myself and I had the people around me that kept believing in me. And also just keeping my faith. I think understanding that keeping the faith in what you know you can do. And then, you know, with the plan God has for you, and then especially for me in my situation, keeping that allowed me to be where I'm at today.
Was there a specific moment for you, you know, either at D3 or in high school or Eastern Washington, where you kind of had that first moment where you're like, okay, I get a chance. I can be an NBA player in my future.
Yeah. When I was at Eastern Washington my first year, the Dallas Mavericks scout had somebody come watch one of my other teammates. And honestly, after that practice, I went to the coach's office to watch film and stuff like that. And my coach brought me in. I forgot which one. It might have been Riley or Pedro. I don't know. One of the two brought me in. They were like, hey, man, the Mavericks, you know, they said they like you. And I was like, the Mavericks? You know, because I didn't even notice. You know, I just knew there was a guy over there, but they didn't have any branding. So I was like.
Was it Nico Harrison?
No. Nah. But they didn't have any branding. So I thought it was just like, you know, a guy that came and watched practice. Because we have people come watch practice all the time. But they were like, nah, the Mavericks came in to watch so-and-so, but they were impressed by you and like what you did. I was like, oh, that's good. And, you know, from there, I always had in the back of my mind, as long as I played like that, I was at least going to get looks. And then from there, putting the work in to develop my game to where I have it now, and then to keep developing as I'm going along this journey, I knew I was going to get a serious shot.
So, I mean, you start out at D3. I don't think you played AAU, right, in high school?
I didn't play on a circuit. I played AAU, but I didn't play on a circuit. So we played for, like, I played for a small hometown team, you know, 24/7. We played in decent tournaments, I'll say that. Like, we didn't play in, like, you know, the hometown Visalia or nothing like that. Like, we went to Arizona, Los Angeles, Orlando a couple times. But we weren't on a circuit, so it wasn't widely known.
So, like, do you think that, like, why do you start out at D3? Like, why are you not the guy starting out at Duke or even at Eastern Washington? Like, why was it D3 to start for you?
Well, I can tell you, I didn't start at Duke because I wasn't that good. I wasn't Duke material when I first came out of high school. And then, honestly, for me, I can make all these excuses of, like, how people didn't, you know, push my narrative or push my agenda of what type of player I was. But honestly, like I said, it's just, like, I didn't put in the work to match that ambition of, like, wanting to go to Duke or wanting to go to Eastern Washington or even wanting to go to the NBA. Like, I didn't put in the work to match that ambition. And honestly, my game wasn't developed. I was very raw. I think, like, I put up really good numbers at D3, but I was still super raw. And when I got to Eastern, that, like, all that raw talent developed in a really good way, but it also exposed a lot of things I wasn't good at. So from there, I had kind of my baseline on, like, what to get better at, you know, what to master, what I was already good at. and honestly just keep developing my game. You know, they always talk about getting 1% better. And mm-hmm. I think that's a part of my journey and part of me that I'm always embracing. Always wanting to learn, always wanting to get better at anything I can, whether it's physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, you know, just making sure I can elevate my, not only my game, but me as a person.
Now, you said you didn't have this type of like, you know, work in high school or even early at like at D3, yeah. But did you always have kind of this mindset, this growth mindset, or is that something you developed?
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, for sure. I think my grandpa was a Olympic gold medalist in track in 1976. So, and he's like my best friend. So Maxie Parks, by the way, shout out.
You know, I was about to ask what his name is.
But
so he won an Olympic gold medal. Yeah, exactly. What year?
1976.
Wow.
Yeah. So
well, what did he compete in?
4x400 meter relay. Wow. And then individually he ran the 400 meter.
Is he who you get your athleticism from?
Yeah, yeah.
Number one person.
Yeah, shout out, Papa. I love you, man. But honestly, since I was young, and this is what I call my best friend, because like I've been with him since I was before I can remember, you know, and we've spent numerous amount of times together in terms of like watching games, watching football, basketball, whatever it may be, you know, studying sports. And that's how I think we connect really well, not only because he's my grandfather and I'm a lot like him, but honestly through the world of sports, because he's the one that taught me the world of sports and see it from a different lens. We obviously see it from like a lens of a fan, but when we talk about games, we don't talk about just like, oh my gosh, you know, did you see all the threes Luka made or all the dunks, you know, Paolo Banchero had or whatever. We talk about like, why didn't they call a timeout in the fourth quarter? Like, why
thinking
did they
the game.
Yeah, thinking the game, you know. And
why Dagnall fouled up three when Jokic is off the floor.
Exactly. So understand, like, that's what the stuff we talk about. And him being at the top of the world in his individual sport, he's always set that mindset at me of understanding, like, this is what you have to do to be in the top of your sport. Now, when I say I didn't put the work in, I don't mean like I wasn't doing anything. I wasn't just showing up or practicing games. Like I would go and shoot and different stuff like that. You know, I think I would, you know, stay after practice a little bit. Like I think I worked harder than the average high schooler. But at the same time, from what I do now, not even close.
It's like obsession now.
Yeah, now it's an obsession. Like now I understand how much basketball can change my life. And it's not even the money part. That has a big factor in terms of taking care of my family, but it's not the money part that's the obsession for me. The obsession for me is the building relationships and the getting better at something you love.
Like the feeling of improvement,
exactly.
That type of thing.
Like, I mean, I'm in this space with the best players of my age in the world. You know what I mean? And I have a chance to go in the best players in the world ever. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I think just striving for that, always having a goal to strive for, always having a dream to complete, that's the biggest thing for me.
I mean, like kind of what you're describing, it's such a similar theme of like high achievers. Like I asked years ago, I remember Floyd Mayweather was at a Celtics game, and mm-hmm. People were asking him questions as he's walking out of the arena. I asked him, you know, like what are the qualities you recognize and people who become the best in their craft? He's like, never becoming complacent. Mm-hmm. I asked James Harden about that. He's like, having a vision for what it is you want to be. And it sounds like the way you're describing it is once you kind of had that vision, that's when you knew how to work for it. That's when you knew how to chase it. But until you have that, it's hard to really know what you're working for and how to do it. Is that accurate to say?
Exactly. You know, like I said, I want to do it for more than just me. I want to do it for myself in terms of that ambition and that vision I have for myself. I also want to do it for the people that sacrificed for me. Like I'm not here by myself. I didn't, you know, sign myself up for AAU. I definitely didn't pay for it. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. Like my mom, my dad, my grandma, grandpa, like all of them have sacrificed tremendous amounts of time, money, you know, emotions, stuff like that. Anything you can think of, they sacrificed it for me to be where I'm at now and to keep going. And then honestly, like I speak about my grandfather, like he won a gold medal. And if you know gold medalists now, most of them are living lavish lifestyle. Yeah. And he's living
a good influencers.
Yeah, and he's living a great life. But at the same time, I think he could definitely be in that lavish lifestyle that he deserves for for the accomplishment he had. Like, if you win a gold medal, you should be living, you know, in a mansion. Stereotypically, you should be living in a mansion, never working a day in your life. Now, like with my grandfather, he lives, you know, in Fresno, California, and that's like the home everybody goes to. So he's the staple of our family. That house is. But honestly, he still works. So for me, I see that every day.
How old is he?
He's 70, I think 75, wow, turning 76, yeah. But he still works. And for something, for somebody like me seeing that, you were at once at the top of your sport, you deserve to be that guy that all you got to do is wake up and go fishing. And that's the type of lifestyle I want to give him.
Is that what you like to do with him, fishing when you were growing
fishing,
up?
Fishing, talking, just anything really, just spending time. I think when we just spend time together, like we talk a lot, you know, over the phone, in person. When I go back home, I usually stay at their house. You know what I mean? So doing all that stuff, like we spend a lot of time together.
Now, you measure at the combine this week, 6'5" and a quarter height, no shoes, 7'2" and a quarter wingspan, plus nine difference, one of the biggest. I think Rashear Fleming as well was a plus nine difference, 8'10", 8'1" standing reach. Those are your measurements. We know you can shoot. You shot 40% in the last 3 years in college, shot 68% in the shooting star drill that they do with the draft combine. But how would you describe your overall basketball game to somebody that's never watched you play?
Versatile, jack of all trades, Swiss Army knife, whatever term you want to use for all around, and just overall winner. I think a lot of people, when they see me play for the first time, understand the amount of versatility I have on the court. When you watch me play, you can't look at him and be like, okay, well, he plays offense but not defense, because that's not what I predicate my game off. He plays defense but doesn't rebound. Like, I don't think you can look at one area of my game, but he doesn't do that, like, at all, you know. And there's – I got to work on everything. When you talk about what I can get better at, everything. You can always master and perfect everything, as you, like you said, that goes to striving for greatness. But at the end of the day, when I describe my game to people, and what separates me is the sure will and kind of dog mentality I have, and being able to be all around.
I mean, I think with your versatility, one of the things that's interesting to me is, like I said, you shot 68%, one of the best marks of the day on today's Tuesday at the draft combine. We know you can shoot. We saw you do that at Washington State. We saw you do that at Eastern Washington. But the post game, shot 68% out of the post your last year at Eastern Washington. Small sample last year at Washington State. You were 8 of 9 from the post as well. You're 6'6", you know, roughly with shoes, 6'7" with shoes. Have you always had kind of a low post game, or is that something that college coaches wanted to get out of you?
I mean, not really. I think, like, a little bit, because my favorite player of all time is Kobe. And, you know, Kobe had a post game.
Of course.
But Kobe...
You've clearly practiced that fadeaway a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that's where it comes from. But I didn't really, like, add it to my game until I got to Eastern Washington. Because Coach Riley, like, the way their offense runs, we predicate on hunting mismatches. And for me, when I first got to Eastern Washington, I wasn't a guard. I was more of a forward, you know, plug-in guy, you know what I mean? Like, I guarded... I played a lot bigger than what I was. I can say that.
Yeah.
But
you rebound too.
Yeah. But
what, 6-7 rebounds a game?
Something like that.
Can I short you a couple? I don't know.
I don't know. Something like that. But I played more of a big man role, quote unquote, more of a, like a four role my first year at Eastern. So when I was working out, I was up there with the bigs. I was bruising the whole time. So it taught me how to, you know, use finesse in the post, also use physicality. So now when I go up against the guards, especially people smaller than me, it's I'm not going to say easy, but it is easy in a way, you know.
Sure. Playing against a smaller guy.
Yeah, like, just playing against a smaller guy.
I think that's
guy.
An interesting thing for the NBA, with as much as screens are switched, if you do indeed become one of those guys teams lean on to get a bucket, if teams are switching screens, you could back somebody down.
Exactly.
You're not just a shooter, not just a pull-up, face-up guy either.
Yeah, I mean, especially like, say you go against Jose Alvarado, you know, one of the best on-ball defenders in the league, smaller guy. I'm not going to try to beat him with quickness. I'm going to try to beat him with physicality. Obviously, I got to watch, you know, he'll take charges and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But if I can protect the ball while at the same time being in an attack position like you are in the post, then that's beneficial to me. Like, you talk about playing in the post. Like, Jalen Brunson plays in the post all the time. And Jalen Brunson is 6'2". Like, but his post game is great, and it's super effective because that's something he added to his game. I think that's a real level of, like, a three-level score, being able to shoot the three, finish at the rim. And then I don't know if you would predicate the post game as more of a mid-range type, but that's possible. You know what I mean? So, for me, you can bully, finish right at the rim. You can hit fades both over right and left shoulder. You can add in pump fakes, pivots, a whole lot of stuff that's possible out of that post-up game. I think that's just like another version of triple threat in a way.
You mentioned that you practice with bigs. You were more of a big forward at Eastern Washington. one of the things I'm interested about, like, when you just look at your basic numbers, as a sophomore, you averaged 1.8 attempts per 48 minutes from three. Mm-hmm. Then you went up to 5.4 your next year, and then 6.1 the following year after that with mm-hmm. Washington State.
Yeah.
Your free throw percentage, 74% your sophomore mm-hmm. year, then 88% since then. Did something click for you as a shooter for your volume to go up from both the line and from three, or was this like just merely role and what they were asking for you?
Both. I think my first year at Eastern, I didn't need to do that. I didn't need to be the guy shooting six threes a game, you know? And honestly, I probably wasn't that capable of, I was capable of shooting them. Was I capable of making them like I did now? You did have a
high percentage.
Yeah, but very low volume. Low volume, you know? And I think my first year at Eastern, like, we had the three guys we needed at the three positions we needed. Like, we had Tyrese, who was a big guard, steel, great shooter, big 6'7". And Jello, who's playing overseas in Germany right now. Shout out to all three of those guys. But they all filled those roles of being the main guys, you know, and very well deserving. And so I just fit in where I could play, you know what I mean? So I think my next year after that fall, that year, my next year during that spring and summer, I told Pedro and Coach Riley, like, look, I don't want you guys to bring in anybody to replace those guys. Like, I can do this. And they told me, like, all right, we believe you, but this is the work you're going to have to put in to do it. And so me and Pedro every day, like two times a day, every day, was just putting in work to do that. And it was a struggle at first. It was like, because it's stuff I've never done before. I'm learning to play on the ball, learning to come off ball screen. I'm learning to do all this stuff. And especially when it comes to the shooting piece, like, I'm taking thousands of shots a week, like thousands upon thousands of shots a week. And like, missing more than I'm making because it's just I haven't done it. But at the end of the day, as that work was getting put in, I was starting to make them. I was starting to refine my jump shot. I was starting to, you know, refine different things in my game that helped me gain an advantage over the opposer. So for me, when it comes to shooting, I'm still learning great ways to get my jumper off. Like, I learned earlier, not this month, but last month when I came out here, like, hand placement on the ball before the ball even gets there, making sure your hand is low, your wrist is loaded and back, stuff like that. And it's helped my jumper get faster, more consistent, stuff like that, you know? So I'm always willing to learn. And like you said, it's just the work and the role they wanted me to get in and the role I wanted myself to have. Mm-hmm. And then obviously it's paid off so far.
So it's a little bit of both there. Well, what are you working on right now then? You mentioned the hand mm-hmm. placement with receiving the ball, even before receiving the ball, to improve your quickness. But like, what is there something you're working on right now specifically? A certain move, something mm-hmm. in your game?
Everything, honestly. But I say the biggest thing is my handle. I think a lot of people say I can't dribble the ball, and it kind of urges me in
like
a way.
Economical with your movements is the way I describe it. You're not like Kyrie Irving breaking down exactly. people with the ball on a string, but mm-hmm. you're, I mean, like, I hate even saying the name, but it's like Kawhi. In terms of 7'2" wingspan, you're mm-hmm. long as hell.
Yeah, for sure.
But you're very economical with your movements.
Yeah, I think for me, it's just making sure people understand, like, I can be that primary to secondary ball handler. I'm capable of that.
Primary to secondary. Yeah. I feel like you.
It depends where I'm at. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, if I'm on the Thunder, you know, Shea's the primary ball handler. Yeah. I'm not going to take that responsibility from him. Now, if I'm on, I don't know, say the Heat, you know, and Tyler Hero has to play off the ball at a time, like, I can be that secondary ball handler. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That turns the primary. But for me, it's just making people understand, like, just because it's not a strength, like a super strength of mine, doesn't mean I'm not capable of doing it. Like, do I have work to do? Absolutely. Am I putting in the work to do it? Yes. Now, when people just go out and say, like, I can't dribble, now that's what upsets me, because you don't understand the work I'm putting in to do so.
Like, teams or scouts have said, or something you just read online?
Nah, it's something I got sent a minute ago, uh-huh. and, you know, I'm not going to say where or who said it, but somebody said that I couldn't dribble. And it just, you know, it's just fuel to the fire, really.
Just prove them wrong.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I don't mind it. You know, at the end of the day, that's your opinion. And, you know, I'm just here to prove people wrong.
I mean, the funny thing is with you, like you said, last year you played six games. Mm-hmm. You didn't play a lot. But I felt like you really had an opportunity in those six games to show your passing, your playmaking mm-hmm. ability. I would expect that would have been part of your role throughout the year. And what mm-hmm. impresses me is, like, you put good zip on the ball. you pass the ball accurately off the dribble, and even within just the flow of the offense, you keep it moving.
Yeah.
Like, you understand your role.
Yeah.
And I think as the handle improves, like, I have you 14 on my board right now. And, like, part of me wants to put you, like, top 10-ish, somewhere higher, because, like, there's a foundation with your game. We know you can defend. We know you're versatile. We know you work hard. You can see the emotion you play with, rooting for your teammates. Like, you bring intensity to the floor. We know you can shoot the hell out of it. We know you can attack a closeout, do these minimum things, and make the right pass. But, like, the handle, when you see your flashes from mid-range and you see the way you pass the ball, whether it's out of the post or on some of those driving kicks, it's like, huh, maybe there is, like, more primary and, like, less secondary down the line with this guy.
Yeah, I think, you know, it kind of sucks I played six games, because I think as the, like, the final two games right before I got hurt, I was getting super comfortable, because, like, a lot of that has to do with comfort too. Like, how comfortable are you in terms of this role? How comfortable are you being that primary guy? And for me, I was just getting to that point where I was like, it started clicking. I can say that, you know, and I wish I would have been able to show more, you know, like you said. But when it comes to, like, the playmaking and all that, I think one of the biggest knocks I've had for myself through my career is, like, my assist to turnover ratio has been abysmal. I can say that. And for me, that's the one area of my game when I look at it, I'm like, I'm way better than that, you know. And I'm just basing this off the Eastern Washington film. But for me this year, you know, in the short sample size I had a pretty decent assist to turnover ratio. And I think it would have gotten a lot better as the year would have went on. But at the same time, a lot of that stuff has to do with comfort. But most of it is just the work. You just got to put in the work for it. Like, that's a big thing to address. Like you said, like, I'm not saying I'm not a Kyrie. Nobody is. Kyrie is Kyrie for a reason. Now, will I settle for a Kawhi right now? Yeah, I'm cool with that. Kawhi is real methodical, like you said, and he can get to where he needs to get to. But I think I'm capable of more of that too.
Who would you compare yourself to? Like, what's your best NBA comp?
My best NBA comp, probably Kawhi or Jalen Williams from the Thunder.
Those are two good ones.
Yeah, J-Dub, seeing him play in person was actually, like, I saw my game in him a lot. You know, a guy that just brings ultimate intensity, has that role. Like, when Shea's off the floor, he's the one. You know what I mean? Like, and being able to stretch the floor, three-level scorer, play defense, locks up guys, you know. And then honestly, being able to play off the ball too. Like, when Shea's off the floor or on the floor, he's able to be that guy coming off of screens. He's still getting his in a way, you know, but he does whatever he needs to do to help the team. And he plays with that fire and that intensity, I think, that us mid-major guys got. You know, he went to Santa Clara.
Yeah.
You know, me at Eastern and then Washington State. I know you called them a high major, but we are in the WCC. Yeah. So I don't know if he would say mid-major or not. Mm-hmm. But honestly, just that fire those type of guys play with, I resemble a lot to that. And then, like you said, the Kawhi thing, I think a lot of people have compared me to Kawhi just with the length and body type.
Putting in the NBA? Have you heard that from NBA teams you've talked to?
Yes, I have. And then just, like, a lot of, you know, NBA, a lot of scouts, a lot of people. But obviously, I got a little more work to do muscle-wise to get to Kawhi. Yeah. But
he's ripped.
Yeah,
but man gets paid. You have that on your side too,
yeah,
right?
But at the end of the day, like, Kawhi, top 10 player in our game, easily. Yeah.
When healthy, he's unbelievable.
Yeah, easily.
I mean, as we saw, I think this year with the Clippers, it's, you know, he had the 39-point banger of a performance. I wish he were able to replicate, but at his age, it's a bit harder to do.
Yeah,
I think those are good comps, though. I mean, I think OG Anunoby is kind of another one, like a slightly, you know, lesser version of Kawhi is another one for you. But he's like a different type of player. What 2K rating would you give yourself entering your rookie season?
At this moment? See, I don't play a lot of 2K, so I really don't know, like, how that scale is.
They're all the ratings are too high. It's like 60 to 99.
Yeah. I wouldn't give myself no 60. 75.
I mean, that's fair.
I think it's 75
is good. They'll
probably
put you at, like, a 71, 72.
Yeah,
something
like that. You know, but, you know, the thing is, there's always room to grow. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, for me, you start at 71 or 75 or wherever it may be. If they put me in the 60s, it's room to grow to that 99. You know what I mean? So,
if you could download a specific move, like a trademark move that a player has, and install it into your own game, what would it be?
Ooh, that's tough. Trademark move. I'm not gonna lie, probably the Luka step back. I think Luka shoots that probably 12 times a game, and like his percentage is so high on that, and he don't need a lot of space to get it off. Either that, or LeBron's look at the ball three. he barely misses that shot. But nah, honestly, probably Luka shot, or like a Kobe Patton fadeaway, something like that. But those are two great shots from guys that shoot high percentages, and you can tell they work on them.
And you mentioned two Lakers. You grew up in Fresno, California. Mm-hmm. Family of Laker fans, I believe, yep, correct?
Absolutely.
How'd you react earlier this year? You're not a Lakers fan now, but how'd you react earlier this year when you get the notification that the Lakers trade for Luka?
Oh, we actually just played University of San Francisco, and I'm in the locker room. I look at my phone, and I thought it was a joke. And so I'm looking at it, and my friends text me in our group chat. They're like, bro, Luka to the Lakers. I was like, all right, bro, stop messing around. Then I go to ESPN, and I see it's true. And like, because I was like, yo. So, and I was the first one on my team to know. So I went around to all my teammates. I was like, hey, man, you know, Luka just to the Lakers for AD. And I got a coach on my team that's also a Laker fan. So I went to him. He looks at me, goes, what? And so we were all shocked. Like, it was more shocking than anything because, I think, like, a lot of the world, Luke is the last person you thought would get traded, you know. But at the end of the day, it's a business, and I'm glad he's on the Lakers. You know what I mean? the fan in me and the fan of my family is glad he's on the Lakers. But at the same time, I'm getting to a space where I'm potentially, you know, if I don't go to Lakers, I'm going to have to guard them. And from there, it ain't no fan. It's we neck to neck. You know what I mean? So
your whole family's Laker fans, you know, from Fresno. Any regrets you didn't become a Warriors fan with all their success this last decade?
Nah, because I wasn't born in the time the Warriors were good. I was 10 years old in 2013 when Steph popped off in the Garden. Mm-hmm. I think it was 2013. But for me, I got a lot. It's funny because I got a lot of my family that also transitioned from Laker fans to Warrior fans. Wow. Because during the time, the Lakers weren't good. The Warriors were good. And they were like, so we're Warriors fans now. So I'm like, you know, at the end of the day, I like the Warriors. I like the way they play. And especially the way they, like, change the game in a way. You know, with just their with their ability to shoot the ball and, like, really have Draymond be the point forward and, you know, Steph come out the ball and all that stuff. But, like, for me, I'm not really concerned with being a Warriors fan, Kings fan, Clippers fan, none of that stuff. So.
I mean, at this point, you're not a fan of anybody. Yeah, you're a fan of whoever you get drafted. Yeah, exactly. By, right? I mean, it's you mentioned the Warriors. It's kind of sad, like, how much this second round has been defined by injuries. Yeah. Steph with a hamstring injury. Mm. Tatum, we just found out today.
Yeah, tore his Achilles.
It's like horrible news. And Cavs have had some injuries, though I think the Pacers probably would win that series anyway. Nuggets Thunder, that's been an amazing series as well, but like a lot of injuries this round as well. But like overall, the playoffs I think have been awesome.
Yeah,
what have been your main takeaways watching the postseason so far?
One, the healthiest teams win. I can tell you that. I mean, what happened to Steph was kind of in a way catastrophic. Like nobody expected that to happen, and it kind of sucks too. Because, like, I've dealt with strains in my calves before, and I understand, like, how serious that is. A lot of people think it's not that serious, but it's serious. But honestly, it has been the best playoffs we've seen in a while. Like, I think the last time we've seen this type of competitiveness and, like, just pure dog in a lot of teams was the bubble, in my opinion. Like, the bubble was just pure hoops. Like, obviously, you didn't have the fans and stuff there. But now it's kind of the same thing with all the atmosphere, you know. And my biggest takeaway so far has just been how physical it's been. Like, it's been so physical. Like, and that's the way I like to play. And that's the way that's how I grew up playing. Like, you wasn't calling no fouls. Unless it was, like, blatant, you wasn't calling no fouls. Like, if you got hit in the arm, nah, check up. Let's go. Next, other person's ball. You missed a shot. That's how it is. And that's how I grew up. And the people around me treated me. Like, they didn't treat me like a little kid playing basketball. They treated me like, look, if you're going to play basketball with grown men, we're going to treat you like a grown man. So,
I mean, I think it's beautiful. I think it's the best basketball I've seen in years, man. Letting them play physical like this. Mm-hmm. It's like, I know, I understand how people push back and say, well, you can't change the rules. You can't have one way during the full regular season and then have it this way in the postseason. I'm like, I don't know. Man, I mean, I like it. I'm cool with it.
It's bringing that oomph back to it. Yeah. You know, I think, I don't know if you remember the All-Star game. I think it was in Toronto. I think, you know, you remember the All-Star game where, like, they were going neck.
One,
like,
the first one with the target score ending.
Yeah.
It was a great
Or it might have been a Chicago, like, or something like that. But they were, like, they were taking Chargers and everything. Like that type of intensity. Like, you got the best players in the world on the best teams in the world going at it for one common goal, you know, and playing their hearts out to do it. I think that's the best thing in the world, like you said.
I know it absolutely is the best. I mean, that's what we got right now. Mm-hmm. It's what we got right now. And I think regardless of who advances, it's going to be some great matchups moving forward. What's been the most memorable moment so far in your career playing basketball?
Okay, I have two. So actually playing basketball is when we won the championship at Eastern Washington my first year. Because going to a squad and really contributing to a winning squad, I think was great. You know, it taught me how to react, how to be in those moments to win championships. And the guys, you know, that we had on that team, that was a special team, man. Like, shout out to everybody on that team, because that was a special group of guys. You know, obviously we didn't end how we wanted to end, but at the same time, that was probably one of the best teams I've been on. And then my second moment is when I was younger. I remember I actually got a technical in a game because I slammed the ball on the ground and went above my head. And I don't know what I did it for. I was just, you know, being a dumb kid, but I did it and I got kicked out the game, and I didn't know, you know, but I got kicked out the game, had to sit the rest of the time. My team lost. And my mom took me straight to my grandpa's house, and I thought I was going to get whooped. You know, I thought I was going to be in, like, real trouble. And I was in trouble, but it wasn't for the reason I thought. Like, my quote-unquote punishment wasn't a punishment. It was a lesson. He taught me for where you are and the type of player you want to be. You want to be that main guy. You can't act like this. You have to have your head on your shoulders at all times. You have to be the guy to be calm, consistent, and not care about what else goes on, you know, outside of what you can control. The only thing you can control is how you respond, how you react to different things. And for that, that's always stuck with me. And I think that happened when I was like 8, you know, and I'm 21 now. And that's always stuck with me as I've moved on with my career, knowing that the type of player I want to be, I have to sacrifice my ego, emotions, and all that stuff in order to show examples or to just get the best out of myself in something.
Was your grandpa the first person who kind of introduced basketball to you?
I believe so. I think if he did introduce basketball to me, thank you. But I think I would have gravitated towards sports regardless because I was just like, ever since I can remember, I always had something in my hand, a ball, a bat or something. I don't know, something like, you know, I was always watching
TV. Yeah, when you were young.
Yeah, especially, like, I played football. So I played basketball and football growing up. But I always had just like that energy. Like, my mom has this story of me, like, when I was young, I would run in the house and I'd like run in the walls, you know, because I was just so energetic. Like, she would say, like, go speed racer, go, you know, and I'm just running all around the house as fast as I can. And the only way I stopped was running in the walls. And like, I didn't care, you know, because I just had that energy as a kid. And I think playing sports was one way to relieve it in a positive way. And then from there, I just fell in love with it at that time.
I want to ask you 7 quick hitter questions, 7 mm-hmm. rapid fire questions, Cedric. Mm-hmm. 7 random questions.
We'll 7 call random it. Questions.
If you could have any superpower, what would it be?
Invisibility.
Invisibility.
Oh, actually, I lied. Sorry. Teleportation.
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 Okay. Why is that?
Just anywhere at any time. I don't got to take no flights. But man, teleportation would be great.
Show up
right after this. I'd teleport to Fresno, hang out with my family real quick, teleport back.
Come right back. Yeah, I mean, exactly. That'd be a pretty amazing ability to have. What's your weirdest habit?
Ooh. I don't know if this is weird. And the only reason I say that, because like, it's not weird in my house, but I'm a freak cleaner on one day a week. Like if I'm cleaning something, I have to clean everything. I can't just clean, you know. Like, I just can't make the bed. Like, I have to clean, sweep, mop. Like, I have to do everything. But that's only, like, once a week. Like, I'm not, like, I need to clean every day type of guy. But
what's your biggest pet peeve?
Oh, people chewing with their mouth open.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, I can't stand it.
Bad manners?
Nah, I can't. Like, that was, my dad taught me that when I was young. Like, don't chew with your mouth open.
Like, finger looking good. Is that not
allowed? No. The only situation you can chew with your mouth open is if you can't physically breathe out of your nose. Because I actually encountered that one time with one of my old teammates when I was young. Because I told him, I was like, hey, man.
Deviated septum and both.
I don't know, something. But I literally looked at him. I don't know. But I looked at him.
Excuse for eating sloppy.
I have no clue. But all I know is I asked him. I was like, hey, man, I'm sorry, but can you like chew with your mouth closed? It just weirded me out. And then his mom was like, sorry, he can't breathe out of his nose. I was like, oh, my bad. You know what I mean? Like, you're good. You're good, bro. I was like, you're good.
Sounds like his mother making excuses for him.
Hey, if she was, then she was. But, you know, I'm not going to argue with moms.
No. Question number four. What's some music you like that might surprise people?
I like old soul music, like okay. Luther Vandross, Never Too Much. I did a mixtape to that song on my Instagram, which is cool.
Oh, wow.
I like Return to the Mac, Mr. Telephone Man, like a lot of older songs. Like now we're in such like a rap heavy, you know, era. For me, I like a lot of the older songs, like smoother songs.
Do you know this guy on my shirt, David Gilmour?
No.
Guitarist from Pink Floyd. Do you know any Pink Floyd?
Mm-mm.
No.
Honestly, I don't know a lot of artists. I just like the song, you know. Yeah.
You're one of those.
I'm more like, of if I hear the song,
but not yeah, the artist.
Exactly. If I hear the song and like I just like it, I'll add it to the playlist. Like it don't matter what artist it is from or none of that stuff.
Your team needs a stop. You're on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the four teammates you're drafting to get that stop?
Do I have to play with them?
Yeah, or? You're on the floor.
Yeah.
Cedric.
No. In terms of like, did I have to play with them for me to draft? Oh,
it
okay.
Could be anybody, NBA, historically, alive, dead, anybody.
Okay. Wemby. Jaden McDaniels. Kawhi. Myself.
A lot of length and versatility there.
Dyson Daniels.
Okay, that's a good group. That's a good group. A lot of modern players.
Mm-hmm. I also had to, because you know, even though we need a stop, and if we get back on offense, we need to score the rock too.
That's a good group there. Yeah. Number six. What do you do besides basketball? What do you like to do when you're not hooping?
I like to play video games, and most of the time, I play video games honestly to just talk to my friends. What you games? Know, back home, I play Madden.
Okay,
Madden and college football. Actually, shout out to my friends. I'm the best in college football. Y'all can't beat me. They know who they are. But no, I play a lot of football games. Like I play basketball, so I can't play 2K. It's unrealistic to me. But like, do I enjoy 2K here and then when my friends and I are playing it? Yeah. But like, when you got 5'9" guards in the game dominating the game, and then in real life a 6'6" guard is the one dominating, like that's not real to me. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. But yeah, I play a lot of football games. And I like to cook and bake too.
Okay.
Yeah, my girlfriend's a big baker. Her and her mom are big bakers. So I honestly started baking to kind of like understand that world. And
what's
then
your specialty? Your number one?
Cookies.
Cookies.
Yeah, I make red velvet cookies. You know, you can ask any of my Washington State teammates. Like, my red velvet cookies are a hot commodity.
People look forward to them when you brought them in, right?
Exactly. But
you get excited, just mocking when you walk in the locker room.
Yeah, I had to stop making them though because dudes was, you know, one, I was getting begged too much to make them, but also we got to win games. You can't be eating cookies all the time, like you said. But at the same time, like whenever I do make them, they are a hot commodity. I can say that. But really, just to like understand their world a little more, you know. And then I ended up finding like it's enjoyable. Like it's actually enjoyable, you know. When you make something from scratch or you make something like that, you cooking like figuring out something from like all these ingredients and having a finished product. Not only does it taste good, but it feels good to get something done.
It
kind
of relates to that feeling we were talking about earlier with the feeling of improvement.
Yeah, exactly.
And seeing yourself get better at something and learn something.
Yeah, exactly.
So kind of that similar type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Last question here, Cedric. Number seven, what do you love about basketball the most?
Basketball is the one thing I cannot live without. I think basketball and family are the two things I can't live without. And, you know, my mom has this analogy for me and my sister, her two children. We're each a half of her heart. You know, when me and my sister and my mom are all together, her heart is full. For me, basketball is one half, my family's another, you know. And if you take away basketball, I only have half a heart the rest of my life. And that's just the analogy I'm using. But if you add that, as I have my family and the people in my corner, I got a full heart. I've had an experience, you know, one summer where I didn't play basketball. I didn't play AAU. I didn't pick up a ball for months. No. And
what was that?
Just because I think I just wasn't getting – I don't know if I really loved the game at that point.
And in high school?
This was, yeah, my sophomore going into junior year of high school. And I was supposed to be playing AAU, but I didn't. And it wasn't that I didn't love the game. I just didn't love the situation I was in at the moment. And I realized that after the summer, because that summer I helped my grandpa build a house. And from that, I realized, one, that building a house is super hard. And two, I appreciate everything my grandpa taught me in terms of like having all the skills to do that. But I told myself, like I said, you can deal with it. Like, no offense to any construction workers, any, like, that's a great career if you want to do it. You know what I mean? It's just not for me. And understanding, like, if I could do something I love and play basketball, I'd be able to handle anything. So this, like I said, I wasn't happy with the situation. I was, like I said, I'd rather deal with that than have to do this every single day in a hot beaming sun. And then from there, just I realized how much I loved the game of basketball and how much of what I was doing was going to determine what spot I was in for it, you know. And from there on out, I've been playing basketball every year, every summer, everything for the rest of my life.
Hey, man. Long future ahead for you, Cedric.
Yes, sir. Thank
you. Here in Chicago at the NBA Draft Combine. Got a bright future ahead of you, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Appreciate it. Appreciate you having me.
Big thank you to Cedric Coward and Jonathan Gavoni for joining me on today's episode. Thanks to Mike and Emmy for producing it, for Adi and Ishmael for being there in Chicago, helping record all these interviews. We got a lot coming. A lot of draft interviews with prospects coming up in the weeks to come. So stay tuned for those. And tomorrow I'm going to have Tom on the show talking about the NBA playoffs. So we'll be back again pretty soon. Have a good day.